This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. If it's a sports story you're talking about, you can guarantee they'll be talking about it. Unless it's something like arena football. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
It's the Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Ennis alongside Arden Zwelling and Ryan Dixon. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. Lots to get to on this Saturday. Get to some wildness of the Open Championship. They're still in a weather delay, a wind delay. Things getting wild there. They will have a Monday finish for only the second time in Open Championship history. They've only been playing that tournament for 144 years. Major League Baseball's non-waiver trade deadline fast approaching. And we'll weigh in on Kanye West as well. Why not? But we start with the Blue Jays, who start the second half with a nice little 6-2 win over the Tampa Bay Rays. Improve to 500 at 46-46. And guys, Drew Hutchison doing his weirdo thing where he's good at home and oh so lousy on the road. It's hard to figure. It makes no sense because he's the complete opposite last year. I don't know. It's hard not to keep asking those questions of him. Just three strikeouts. And I take this start a bit with a grain of salt because it is the Tampa Bay Rays, and they can't hit. It seems like every year, one or two games, they're either getting no hit or one hit. But he shut them down, and he picked up the win, and he's 9-2. Makes sense of this, Arden.
I can't. It's an anomaly. I don't know. It's an aberration. I mean, the whole home and away thing, right?
It's a bit of a bigger sample size now, though. Like, there must be something to it, is it just like the freakish of all freak seasons?
Well, I mean, last year it was the reverse at the halfway point, and then it worked itself out over the second half. I expect that to happen again. I think that something more concrete you could point to is that last night Drew Hutchison threw his changeup more often, and that was something that helped him a lot and something Pete Walker has been stressing to him ad nauseum. And, you know, he did it last night, and he feels like it's a pitch that the more he throws it, the better it feels for him. And, you know, so he really got away from it against righties, not as much against lefties, but he threw it a lot more last night and had success. And so that's something that he can kind of build on and carry into his next start, which is going to come on the road, I believe, in Seattle in that crazy weekend series, unless he's going to pitch in Oakland, actually. I mean, he might get the last game in Oakland. Yeah, that's what he'll get. But still, I mean, that's something you can carry forward.
Yeah, who knows? We'll get to, obviously, the talk continues to be about trade targets and all that. We'll get to that in just a second. But Ryan, this team on the surface with the starting pitching, with the bullpen that it has right now, like, is there any question that it needs an upgrade? I mean, could it organically figure itself out here in the second half and be a good enough team to limit opposition runs with the offense that they have, or do they desperately need something?
I think they clearly need something. Even if you did bank on some progression, though, don't you think the offense is owed more than that? I just feel like because the offense is so good, because there is such a legit chance to get into the playoffs with the, you know, fairly weak division. I mean, the Yankees have opened up a 4.5 game lead for whatever
which
that's
worth.
Which
is the biggest division lead in all of baseball now, which is crazy.
It's funny because the East has been so bunched, but you know, there's an opportunity there. And as we've seen recently with wild card teams going all the way to the World Series, you really do just have to get in and your number could get pulled. So because the Jays offense is so solid, I don't really understand what the point of just kind of, you know, crossing your fingers and hoping is. When you know you've got one huge thing in place, why not try and lock down the other element?
But the thing is, for me at least, and from every indication we've received from Alex Anthopoulos, he doesn't want one of those rental guys, right? Like, he's not, if he wants Johnny Cueto tomorrow, he could give up Marcus Stroman, who's probably not going to factor in this year. And if he does, it will be in a limited capacity at the end of August. Maybe he'll have him for September, maybe just out of the bullpen. That's something he could do straight up, probably, if you're the Reds, because that's a guy who can factor into their rotation as soon as next year. And you get the best arm available. You only get him for Well, if they picked him up now, it'd be like 13 starts. You're not likely to get him right now. That's something you could do. I don't see Alex Anthopoulos doing something like that because there is still the future to think about.
There is for sure, but obviously the thing with the Jays is they've got multiple young arms. So let's just say you put Stroman on the we are not trading list. You still have Sanchez. You still have Norris. I don't know. I'm a conservative armchair GM. I will say that. I am not the guy who says go trade prospects for help right now typically, but when you've got an abundance of something and such a clear need. And of course there is that theory out there that prospects do get overvalued. And a lot of times, I mean, of course we can all rhyme off five trades where, you know, so-and-so young guy got traded at 21 and came back to haunt that team forever. But there's also a lot where the guys just kind of peter away into nothing. And, you know, even if the Jays did move one of those young arms, I would say they're still shaping up pretty well for the future of the rotation. I don't know. It just seems like there's a really good crack this year to do something. So I would consider it heavily. Maybe not your favorite of those guys, but your second favorite.
Arden, is Alex Anthopoulos going to shop in that aisle that he does not want to shop in, the rental aisle?
I'd be surprised. I really feel like he's gonna do everything he can to get a guy who he has control over, and I imagine there is at least a guy out there who is capable of that. I mean, I know he'd love to have Johnny Cueto, and you hear that the Blue Jays have been one of the most aggressive pursuers of Johnny Cueto, along with the Houston Astros of all people. But I just can't imagine him. It's so out of character for him, and I know he's done things differently philosophically this year, but it'd be so out of character for him to do that.
That it's going to take a guy like Stroman to get Cueto, right? Like somebody's going to blow their brains out.
Hoffman would be the other guy, I think, that would be in that conversation, or Norris plus.
Where do you come down on Hoffman? Because he's been promoted to AA now, and it's a curious promotion to be sure. He's 22. We've seen guys at 20 years old enter the major leagues just this year, and Alex Anthopoulos and the Blue Jays seemingly changing their organizational philosophy on how quickly you bring young players up to the major leagues. I was reading something the other day, though, too, about Hoffman. Yeah, the velocity's there. I mean, he didn't blow the doors off in single A. The strikeout numbers weren't, like, otherworldly. And apparently the late life on some of his pitches are a little different, especially the curveball since the Tommy John surgery. Where do you come down on Hoffman?
Well, the Jays have kind of changed how he's pitched a little bit. There's really excellent piece on Fangraphs by Kylie McDonald. Which was excellent and actually broke down the video of how the Blue Jays have changed his motion. He's a lot more upright. He's a lot more traditional, whereas he used to be more of like a Chris Sale type, almost like a dip and dive, super whip to the arm, like all that stuff. Blue Jays have changed a lot of that, and a lot of that could be just to take some of the stress off of his elbow, which is something that, you know, Tommy John surgery, I mean, even after the 12 months, when you start pitching again, there's still another like 6 to 8 that it takes to get your life back. That it takes to get used to throwing again. Like it continues, even though you're still pitching.
Yeah.
So that might be something just to kind of get him over that hump, you know, not to re-injure the arm, but, you know, in that piece on Fangraphs by Kylie McDaniel, I mean, he said that basically, you know, Hoffman went from a guy who was like a Verlander comp to more of a, you know, a traditional just kind of, you know, early contact innings eating guy. Like they kind of changed the way his approach. So it'll be interesting to see what the impetus was behind that and what the product of that will be.
Well, plus, I mean, yeah, he can throw 99. He can touch triple digits. But the thing is, I mean, Major League Baseball players can hit that. If it's straight and you don't have an off-speed pitch to complement that. But the promotion to Double A, like I said, he didn't blow the doors off Single A. What do you think the impetus was to bring him up to New Hampshire?
I think that in his last few starts, he was quite a bit better. Like in his first few, I mean, he had eight earned runs in his first two starts. But then over his, you can look at his last four starts for Dunedin there, 5 innings, no runs, 5 2/3 in a run, 5 innings, 2 runs, 6 2/3 in 1 run, right? So he had like 4 really, really good starts in a row there. You know, with high strikeouts, low walks. I mean, I think he was just too good for that level. I think he just had shown that he could dominate that level. So you bump him up and you challenge him. And maybe they're being aggressive with him in a hope of getting him to the majors by September or possibly earlier. I'd be really surprised if it was earlier. But, I think September isn't a crazy suggestion with a guy who, you know, is 2 years older than Roberto Osuna and, you know, just a little bit younger than Aaron Sanchez, who's like a big part of the rotation, right? So, you know, he is a bit of an advanced guy, but like, you know, and I was talking to you on about it on the radio the other night. Like, you look at Marcus Stroman, who's another guy who was kind of an advanced prospect coming out of college, much like Jeff Hoffman. He did an entire year at Double A.
Right.
So it'd be I'd be surprised to not at least see, you know, Jeff Hoffman get 8 to 10 starts at Double A just to show that he can dominate that level and that he can pitch well there.
But this team needs help and it needs it immediately. Ryan, if they don't go out and make a deal for a pitcher, whether that's a starter, whether that's a reliever, does it get your juices flowing? Does it get like, does Jose Bautista not make the same comments he made last year at the non-waiver trade deadline if they're calling up Jeff Hoffman? If they're at least doing something, but not giving away their future, like instead of going out and getting Johnny Cueto, it's Jeff Hoffman that's thrown onto this team before September. Does that satisfy both the fan base and the players that have done so well scoring runs?
I don't think so. I think it's worse than last year. I feel like the need is even more pronounced than it was last year. I mean, maybe there's a mid-tier guy out there. I know Sportsnet's one of our men on the scene, Ben Nicholson-Smith, was rhyming off the guys that, you know, everyone's heard the Samardzijas and the Cuetos, but, you know, it's not like there isn't another list of guys out there who are not maybe front of the rotation guys, but, you know, and this is where it gets a little tenuous, but if, as you said, you get a little improvement from what you have or you find someone internally who can be promoted and do something, and then you couple that with going out and getting a guy who functions as, you know, a 2 or 3 guy, then at least you've made some gain without, you know, or I guess erasing your future in your mind, because obviously the price point for some of these guys is a lot lower. But I don't know. It just seems like it's begging for a change, something more than, you know, one guy promoted from Double A.
Alex Anthopoulos isn't asking my opinion, but if it were up to me, that's exactly what I'd be doing. I'd be going out and seeing who of, like, the Matt Latos, Dan Herons, maybe Mike Leakes of the world you could add to this rotation as not an elite guy that you're going to have to give up an elite-level prospect for, but somebody that can give you better production out of the starting rotation than you're currently getting. I like Latos. I don't know what it takes to get Matt Latos, and apparently he's kind of a jerk. Like, and apparently that factors in. Like, he's not a great clubhouse guy, as they try to change the clubhouse chemistry.
That's part of the Papelbon thing, too, right?
Right.
Is that he's not the nicest person. Not a great human being, Jonathan Papelbon. So, you know, and you don't, it's a delicate thing, the clubhouse, right? You don't, you know, yes. Blue Jays have put so much time into building this harmonious ecosystem they have now. I don't know if they want to throw a
wrench
into that.
There's no jerks in there anymore.
Can you just leave a guy out on an island, though? Like, he comes in halfway through the season, just be like, I don't care if you talk to anyone. Just show up when we tap the right arm and come in the ninth. That, you know, like...
Yeah, like Roger Clemens, don't even go on road trips,
yeah,
right? Like,
sure.
Just like, yeah, we'll bring you in an hour before every game. I don't know, don't they have enough good guys that you can suffer through a couple of jerks?
Yeah, you'd think. I don't know. It didn't work last year, right? I think the problem is with the jerks is when it goes wrong, is when things aren't going well.
Right, you stop winning.
Yeah, right? When you lose 2, 3, 4 in a row, you don't have that kind of cohesion to be able to pull through quite as well as a good group would. But it's hard to quantify that stuff. It's hard to talk about, you know?
Yeah, because we don't know.
You don't know.
I mean, we're just talking about hearsay. I mean, we're close enough and we talk to enough baseball people who are close to the situation that's the indication we get. But I don't know, maybe Matt Latos is like the nicest guy. Maybe Jonathan, well, probably not. But
is that good enough though? Like a Latos leak, right? Like, is that kind of guy? Like, don't you know, you have, like, if Drew Hutchison throws to a 4 ERA over the second half, isn't that kind of the same thing?
Right. But then you also have, like, I don't know, you have Felix Dubron. He could do that. I think you're just giving yourself more bullets in the chamber, at least.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The thought is Aaron Sanchez comes back and takes Dubron's spot. And then if Daniel Norris ever figures it out, he could bump up and move Sanchez to the bullpen, solve two problems. I mean, it's possible if Hoffman's coming up, if Marcus Stroman's going to pitch this year.
Right, I know. But there's so many what-ifs there, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, it just sounds so... It sounds not right to give up a Marcus Stroman for a Johnny Cueto in 13 starts, 12 starts, 10 starts. Like, that's... Mm-hmm. I mean, how many wins is that? How many bonus wins is that from Johnny Cueto? How many 2-1 games is the bullpen going to blow that Johnny Cueto starts, right? Like, those are not guaranteed. If you knew you were picking up Johnny Cueto and you were guaranteed 12, he's going to win every single start. Like, if you were going to do, remember the Brewers when they traded for CC Sabathia down the stretch, traded Matt LaPorta, who turned into nothing.
Yeah.
But CC Sabathia, they were starting him on short rest, like, every time down the stretch. They were starting him on 3 days rest, and he made, like, 15 starts in the last month and a half.
Yeah.
I don't think you can do that for Johnny Cueto, which, because there's also questions about the health of his elbow, too.
Yeah, but there's even less of a guarantee when you get a Mike Leake, right? Or yeah. or a Latos or a, you know, an Iwakuma or whoever you're going to get, right? Like, there's even less guarantee there.
That's why I think Latos is the guy that makes the most sense, because at least his stuff is better than the other guys. Yeah, I think Leake would get beat up pretty good. Heron, I kind of feel like there might be something there because his whip is low enough and he's been able to figure it out in the American League before, although. You know, a couple incarnations ago, but
kind of a burly type, soft tossing guy, a lot of movement. I don't know. I mean, I wonder if you would still have to give up like a Norris to get a Leake. You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
and at some point you get to in for a penny, in for a pound territory, right? If you're kind of giving up something of significance for the B guy, you might as well go all in and get the A guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's all about team control for Alex. We know that. And it's all about team control for everybody in Major League Baseball. But is it good enough to get team control for a guy that you're sort of maybe overpaying, like a Cole Hamels or a James Shields? To me, that makes a lot of sense as well, because you got a whole lot of money coming off the books next year. Those guys are getting paid $20-plus million, both of them. They're locked up for 3 more years. And who knows if Cole Hamels is going to want to come here. But talking to enough Phillies people, they believe, given the option of either staying in Philadelphia or coming to Toronto, he would choose to come to Toronto. And it might come at the expense of the Blue Jays activating or accepting that option for the fourth year at whatever it is, $25 million on Cole Hamels. Those guys, because remember, like next year, yes, the rotation looks a whole lot better with Marcus Stroman, but wouldn't it be nice to throw an ace guy in front to take the pressure off all those guys? I mean, to have a guy to start opening day, whether it's Cole Hamels or James Shields. I mean, that's, even if you are overpaying him, it's not a 7-year deal, but you're looking at 3 years at $20 million. Maybe it doesn't make sense, but I don't know. To me, it makes more sense than blowing your brains out for Johnny Cueto.
You are going to want a veteran guy on that staff next year, considering Mark Burley's not going to be here.
Yep.
I think it's likely R.A. Dickey's not here.
I don't think there's any chance they pick up that option.
I think if R.A. Dickey pitched really, really well over the second half, they might. But I don't. Right now, I think it's trending towards they might not. I mean, we'll see. I think Alex Anthopoulos might get just a little bit stubborn about it and say, you know, this is the guy that I traded a lot of talent for. I'm getting my value from him, right?
And he's not making it's a $12 million
option? $12 million option, right? It's not crazy. Maybe that's, you know, a trade piece at midseason, even if somebody wanted to take on the associated things that come with R.A. Dickey. But I think you know Alex Anthopoulos, he quotes Warren Buffett and he says, you know, I'd rather, you know, instead of getting a fair company at a good price, I'd rather get a good company at a fair price, right? So that, you know, the good company at a fair price is your Cueto, is your Hamels, is your Shields, right? Like, it's like Dixon said, penny for a pound, right? Like, why just kind of half ass it? Whole ass it, you know?
Yeah, whole ass it. Exactly. Sportsnet Magazine Live, Ben Annis, Arden Swelling, Ryan Dixon. Yeah, I put Cueto in a different category as Shields and Hamels, obviously, because of the team control stuff. And he's going to get a 7-year deal from whoever.
Right.
And it makes more sense for the Yankees to blow their brains out a little bit more to get Cueto, because they can turn around and sign him to that 7-year deal.
They might cost around the same, though, like a Cueto, a Shields, and Hamels.
As far as prospects?
I think so,
Well,
yeah.
That's crazy, then.
Because it's the market, right? Like, it's a seller's market. It's an extreme one, too. So, like, a Mike Leake might cost a lot just in this market, because it's not, you know what I mean? It's a seller's market with very few sellers.
Well, and from what I understand, the Phillies don't care about money, right? It's not, they'll eat some of it, especially on the Papelbon deal. They don't care. It's not like you're going to get a discount because you're taking on all of that Cole Hamels deal. They don't care. They'll play it. Yeah. They'll pay it. It's not about money for them. It's about getting the best young players. And to me, one of those, if the price, like you said, is the same as it would be for a Cueto, doesn't it make more sense to have a guy who's going to be here for 3 more years?
I think so. The thing with Cueto is he's only making $10 million this year. So you pick up Cueto for this back half, you only have to pay him like $4
million. Who cares?
Blue Jays might care.
I know they probably do.
Right?
And that's the thing. That's what I was going to ask you next. Like this payroll parameter stuff. When you're talking about Mark Burley coming off the books next year and maybe R.A. Dickey coming off the books, does James Shields, $20-plus million for the next 3 years, make sense? Does Cole Hamels, $23 million for the next 3 years and maybe for the next 4 years? Does that make sense?
Well, I mean, you could look at next year. You got Jose Reyes at 22, Russell Martin's 15, Bautista and Encarnacion are each going to be at, it's like 12 to 14, somewhere in that range. I mean, you're already kind of up in 60, 65 million right here. Josh Donaldson's going to get a big raise in arbitration.
Yeah.
Just he hits so many home runs and those RBIs, which arbitration loves, right? It's he's going to get it. There's going to be a lot of money on him. You know, I don't know if you're, you know, you're looking at a payroll increase probably from, you know, this year the Jays are kind of at a decrease in payroll from where they were last year. They're down about 10 million and we're hearing that they only have somewhere from 4 to 8 to spend right now.
Well, and the Canadian dollar is taking a big hit.
That's part of it, right? The Canadian dollar is at like a you know, the 6-year low or something like that. Yeah. It's bad.
They maybe need to look into, well, Paul Beeston needs to go back to...
Relocating?
Well, wow, I wasn't going to go there. I was going to say, didn't they get some payments from Major League Baseball, equalization payments?
Did they? Yeah. Yeah, we should bring that back.
Definitely. Dixon, we just discussed or at least alluded to last year's non-waiver trade deadline where Alex Anthopoulos didn't do much and Jose Bautista was outspoken, Casey Jansen was outspoken. One more year left of Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion on their current deals. If they don't do anything or if it's another minor thing, I mean, Danny Valencia was not, I mean, why did we overlook that deal? It's not bad with the Royals.
What he's provided?
Yeah.
And you got Liam Hendricks back, right? You gave up Eric Kratz for him.
Yeah.
Eric Kratz was on waivers yesterday.
Yeah.
Right? He's been on waivers 3 times this month.
Yeah.
You gave up nothing for Danny Valencia.
Yeah, who's a lefty masher. And
yeah.
He's had his moments against the righties.
Brilliant.
Too. But if they don't do anything and your move is Jeff Hoffman or somebody else or a minor thing and things peter out down the stretch, I mean, there's going to be big time noise from those camps, I think, that maybe it's time to move on. And at, if not the offseason at the non-waiver trade deadline, getting rid of Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Bautista, because I don't see them re-upping. I see them wanting big dollars, don't you?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, they're both obviously coming toward the end of it too, right? I mean, they're certainly in the last phase of their career, so it's not like they can say, well, we've got 10 more years to sort this out. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's as much as it, I'm sure there's a segment that feels like it comes off as whining, you understand the frustration, you know? Those guys must feel like, with the bats, they're doing everything they possibly can. And, you know, they're, essentially what they're saying is throw us a bone here, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's the other side. We're talking about surrendering these prospects. Is there part of the offense you could surrender and say, well, we can afford to give a little bit here to get something back on the other side?
I can't tell you how many tweets a day I get about, oh, well, I mean, you have so much offense. Why don't you just trade Edwin Encarnacion? He has 10-5 rights. So does Jose Bautista. And Arden, like, there's no way you can go down that road, right? Like, because even if you come to him with a deal that he doesn't like, you ruin, or it's just, like, weird. You can't even think about trading one of those guys right now, can you?
Yeah, I also don't like plugging, like, one hole of the ship and creating a hole somewhere else, right? Like,
I don't know, but Edwin makes the most sense, though, because you have Colabella, who hasn't slowed down, and Justin
will.
Smoke. I assume he will, but, like, He
was the independent ball like 2 years ago.
I get it, but he's had some limited success in the major leagues at times. And I'm sure he gets exposed, I'm sure, if he's playing every day. I mean, he was playing every day for a while there, though. And Justin Smoke has found it difficult to get into the lineup. Like, at least you don't, it's not like you lose, like, all of that production. And maybe you get Danny Valencia against righties occasionally.
Like, the argument is that you're betting on Chris Colabello and Justin Smoke and Danny Valencia. You know what I mean? To be Edwin Encarnacion. I don't think they will. But I don't know. I don't know how much value Edwin Encarnacion. He's a broken guy. Like, he's not healthy, you know, and he's having a bit of a down year.
Yeah.
You know, the on-base is down a little bit. I mean, it has been fantastic. Like, I think there are clubs that would want him. He'd have to go to an American League club, basically, because he has to DH, so that eliminates like half the teams you could potentially trade him to. 10-5 guy, like you said, so you go to him and you say, hey, like, by the way, we don't want you here.
Yeah.
But and then if he doesn't accept the trade, now you've got a disgruntled guy in the clubhouse, right? And he's a guy who's very tight with other players on this team. When he, you know, Bautista, Reyes, like, he's got a lot of friends in the clubhouse. I mean, so I don't know if you want to throw that, you know, that rift in there.
Is there anybody, because Alex Anthopoulos has said, you know, we'd prefer not to, but we could move somebody off the 25-man roster. Man, Devin Travis looks so good. He looks like he's going to be a mainstay and maybe an all-star at some point at second base for this team. But I'm sure he's a coveted piece by other teams as well.
What I could see Alex doing, and this would be just kind of like a tricky way of playing with the words, would be trading prospects for a 25-man from someone else and then flipping that guy to a third team, right? So kind of like the Rasmus deal, where Alex had to go out and get Edwin Jackson and then flip him to the Cardinals to get Rasmus back, right? So I could see him, you know, I'll send prospects to Team X and then flip whatever 25-man I get from there to Team Y and get the actual player that I want. That's kind of how he could finagle this thing and trade a 25-man player. Otherwise, like, I don't know who you'd trade from this team, because otherwise you got big contracts you're not going to move. Recent, like, Martin Donaldson you're not going to move. No. Bautista and Encarnacion, 10 and 5 guys. Colabello, Navarro, not a lot of value there. So I don't know who else you would move from this
Travis
club.
Is the only guy with value.
Yeah, but then I don't know if you want to reopen that second base hole. You just solved that problem.
Right.
Solved it.
And he looks really good.
Yeah.
And that's a guy that you have for the next 6 years.
Right.
Yeah, you don't want to watch him go out the door. Can this be over at some point? Like, when? Like, I guess in 2 weeks it'll be over. But it's just, I feel like we've been speculating for so long. And the All-Star break is done, and we know the Reds are now open for business like we all expected.
I'm really hoping things are going to pick up, like really, really hoping. And I think that they will. And you start hearing the James Shields rumors coming out, you know, and, you know, apparently the Reds are now open for business, like you said. Houston is now entering as a team that's going to be buying, you know. Like, I think that now you'll really start to see some movement.
And it seems like baseball has now become one of those sports where the deadline is, like, active and crazy. Because last year was maybe one of the craziest of all time.
Yeah.
You had David Price, you had John Lester, you had Yoenis Cespedes, bunch of guys that were on the move last year. So it may come down to the final days. Let's get back to the Blue Jays on the field right now as far as some of the machinations as well. Dalton Pompey up to AAA. I guess it's another feather in his cap, although it's kind of weird the way they've manipulated his season, because Alex Anthopoulos said, he doesn't necessarily have to go back to Buffalo. And there's too much pressure playing in Buffalo because it's so close to Toronto, which is kind of frightening when you're talking about a kid having trouble with the pressure of Buffalo, really.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He's from Mississauga. There's a lot of influences there in terms of people in his life and you know, the people he surrounds himself with. I think it was a good move to get him just away from the border for a little bit and, you know, and bring him back up now. He was clearly too good for Double A. I mean, he went down and was raking, and it was easy for him. So, you know, I think he's in Buffalo now. And if he puts together a few good weeks, hey, maybe... maybe he comes up. You know, I think the time is probably running out on Ezekiel Carrera.
Yeah.
I think it probably ran out a while ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can see him coming back up.
He's done some good things, though.
Yeah, he's been okay.
Yeah. And the defense has kind of been
off,
like,
in the last couple. You thought the defense would be better than it has been, right?
Right.
And Carrera has fallen off in recent weeks in terms of OPS and his production. I mean, you know what? When I watch him play, he is still hitting the ball hard. I'll give him that, and you know, he's still a good base runner, but he's not really being used in as that late game base running kind of guy. But he is fast as hell. Like, he's super, super quick.
So is Dalton Pompey. Aaron Sanchez working his way back to health. He thinks he's ready to be back in the major leagues. Ryan, bullpen starting rotation for Aaron Sanchez, if you had your decision right now, what makes the most sense?
I guess rotation, probably, to, you know, to get him out there. And I mean, ideally, that's where you want your top pitchers to land. I mean, I know they're kind of trying to plug holes all over the place, but we spend so much time talking about the pitching. If you can find a guy who can go out there and reliably give you 6-7 every fifth day, I think you have to look at that. And there would seem to be some signs he could do that. So why not fully explore that and see exactly what you've got in that guy?
Do you think he gets one more AAA start?
Yeah, he will. He'll start once more in AAA, and then he should be back up on that, kind of at the tail end of that West Coast swing that they're about to go on after the Rays series. But I do think he'll come back in the rotation, but I do believe that eventually he'll be in the bullpen this season.
So what do they do with Felix Dubront then? Because we assume, unless Dubront, I guess, goes berserk, is there still a possibility? And plus, you can't send him down without the possibility of losing him.
Are you really concerned about losing Felix Dubront?
I don't know.
I mean, yeah, he's a piece, but I mean, you picked him up on waivers already, or no? They signed him out, right? Yeah. I think, yeah, because he was released by the Cubs. Yeah. So I mean, he'll make his next start, and then if you really, really want to keep him in the fold, you can move him to the bullpen and punt like on a Ryan Tabera or someone who's got options. Or you can just, you know, put them on waivers and see what happens. We've seen them put Todd Redman on waivers three times this year, right? Steve Tolleson.
Yeah, Steve Tolleson, the forgotten Steve Tolleson.
Twice, three times maybe on waivers this year, right? I think it's three now. You know, so they haven't been afraid to expose, you know, those kind of veteran guys on.
They're not franchise changers is what you're saying.
Yeah, right? So they haven't been afraid to put those guys on waivers. So I wouldn't be surprised to see DeBrunk go out on waivers at some point. And he hasn't been great. He's been okay. And KC was kind of a weird one because it was like 110 degrees, right? And he got rocked in the first inning, settled in a bit. And then the game, the way the course of the game kind of changed how you look back on his start, right?
I was in Kentucky at the time, and I was following that game on my MLB at Bat app, and I was scratching my head along with every play that was taking place there. And eventually saw the highlights.
21 runs scored, 10 of them earned.
Yeah, that's impressive. Before we go and take the break here. Yankees, I mentioned, now have the biggest divisional lead in all of baseball at 4.5 games, which is, I mean, to me, that's like good on the Pirates because the Cardinals were way out in front in the NL Central. But I look at the Yankees' schedule they've already played. I look at the players they're getting back that are now healthy. Ryan, I kind of see this team. I know we talk about the American League East being all bunched up, and maybe that'll be true as far as the wild card spot. But I think the Yankees are primed to take off your second half and leave everybody kind of in the dust.
Well, and that's before they go and get whoever, as we talked about. You know, that's the thing with that team, obviously, is who knows what they've got up their sleeve. You know they're not just going to sit back and watch other teams improve around them, especially when, you know, as you said, all of a sudden here they've got the biggest division lead in the majors. Anytime they get a whiff of it, they're going hard. So, yeah, they're definitely going to be a team to watch in the second half.
They were your preseason pick to win the division, weren't they, Arden? You were the only guy out there on an island.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I kind of, I don't know. I've grown to like the Yankees in recent years because they just kind of take these cast-offs from other teams, like these veterans who
like the Yankees? You're in like with the Yankees?
I'm not going to like acknowledge that. these veterans who like, you know, these kind of like guys who everyone thought was washed up, and they bring them together, this like scrappy team of like old guys that, you know, A-Rod, like Mark Teixeira, Brian McCann, like all these dudes who, you know, they think could still get it done. Like, you know, and then you throw in like a Tanaka, who's like one of the most exciting pitchers to watch in the majors. And it's an awesome bullpen, and it's kind of a team. If they weren't the Yankees, right? Like, yeah. I feel like more people would like get behind them. That's it.
They're not your older brother's Yankees, though, right? They're not the. I mean, they still kind of are, but they're not the team with, as you said, the overwhelming talent where you just go, no. Oh, give me a break. You know,
that's the Dodgers now, right?
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
The Dodgers now, right?
Yeah.
But if you look at it, the Jays and the Yankees still play each other 13 times.
Yep.
Right? And the Jays still play the Rays a bunch. I mean, there's a ton of AL East games. Like, this
That's
division.
That's the way baseball works with the divisional games at the end of the season.
Man, it could swing so much. 13 more games between the Jays and the Yankees. So you think about a 4.5-game lead that the Yankees have over the Jays. That's nothing when they still play each other 13 more times.
The Yankees are done, though, with the West Coast. They've done their road swing through the West Coast, which is even more impressive that they have that 4.5-game lead and still the second half of the season to play. When we come back, the Open Championship still in a weather delay. They're going to play apparently in 1.5 hours. Winds crazy, like 50-mile-an-hour winds. And there's some vines on Twitter of guys trying to pour water into cups, and it's not working out so well. We'll talk about that. Also, Nick Faldo and Tom Watson saying goodbye to the old course at St. Andrews. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Annis alongside Arden Zwelling and Ryan Dixon. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Two players now, Dustin Johnson and Jason Day, who have gone out. And now they're 1 over par, Jason Day being 2 over par, to find out that the golf course is unplayable. And now they've called it. And, you know, to the demise of two guys. And that could, in the end, it could be instrumental in how this thing plays out. All of a sudden, either one of those guys loses the tournament by a shot when they probably shouldn't have played at all.
1046, Sportsnet Radio Network. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Annis alongside Arden Zwelling and Ryan Dixon. That was Ian Leggett, our golf analyst here on Sportsnet, talking about the weirdness this morning at the old course at St. Andrews, because winds were high this morning. They're high right now. In fact, so high that they're in a weather delay. But they still let some of the golfers go out this morning at 7 o'clock local time. Some guys only played one hole. Some guys were allowed to continue as long as they wanted. Some guys only hit one shot. And as Ian mentioned there, some guys took bogeys. And when you're talking about a major champion, I mean, one shot could be the difference. As it stands right now in a weather delay, Dustin Johnson is through 15 holes of his second round. Danny Willett in the clubhouse, he's at 9-under, as is Johnson. And Jordan Spieth still definitely in the mix. He's at 5-under, made a bogey as well. In a tie for 15th, he's playing with Dustin Johnson. So through 15 holes of their second round, they're going to hopefully finish the second round at some point today. But without question, we're looking at a Monday finish. Again, it's only this tournament's only been around for 144 years. It's the second time ever they're going to have a Monday finish, which is crazy, right?
That's crazy. I would have, if you said, what's the over-under on the amount of times rain has pushed the Open to a Monday, I would have been like 25. Like,
yeah, well, because usually they play through it, though, right?
Like, I suppose they're just so accustomed to it, but yeah, I don't know. It just gets so gnarly over there sometimes that I would have assumed. Mind you, it's apparently light until 10:30, so I guess you can squeeze it in.
Yeah. Yesterday they played well into the evening. I think official sunset is quarter to 10 at night local time. It's a five-hour time change here on the East Coast of North America. I love this tournament. I love watching guys struggle. I love watching guys play in crappy weather because I play in crappy weather. And I want to see guys struggle like I do. Do you enjoy that, Ryan?
You know what? It's a really fine line for me where I feel like the conditions are part of the package with the Open, and that's part of the charm, to, you know, if you want to use that word about slicing cold rain. But it gets to a point where it's too much, and it's almost like gimmicky, if that's the right word. You know, it's got to be grounded in some, like, you still have an ability to let your talent shine through. You can't have the forces of nature blowing your golf ball all over the green. And I do feel like sometimes it goes too far like that. How many years ago now was it with that round that Tiger had where it just kicked up? It was in the early 2000s. And I think, now we're used to saying this, but I think he shot 80 back then when it was absolutely positively shocking. Like, there's those times where it's just absolutely unplayable. But for the most part, yeah, I don't want to see a bright, sunny Open. I want to see a little gray. I want to see a little wind. I just don't need, you know, hurricane force winds dictating who wins.
Arden, Dustin Johnson seems like that guy's going to be star-crossed throughout his career until he finally wins a major.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's crazy. I mean, the things that have happened to him.
Yeah, no, it's a tumultuous life of Dustin Johnson. Absolutely a lot going on there. No shortage of interest.
Well, and when you're talking about the ways he has not come away with major championships, we're talking about grounding his club in a sand trap that...
in a divot, basically,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It was nothing.
The patrons are standing and trampling it down.
He found out after that, I believe, right? It was, he got in and it was like...
Oh,
hey,
yeah, that was a sand trap.
Yeah. Could you imagine how disheartening that would be? You're, you know, ready to collect your check and lift the trophy, and it's like, oh, by the way, you touched the ground with your club in what technically was a sand trap.
Right.
And then, yeah, the three putt on 18 just weeks ago, that was a rough one too. He had a real shot at it there. I thought he was going to make eagle. I either thought he was going to make eagle or make bogey for some reason at the U.S. Open. I was like, he's either going to win it with one putt or it's going to be
And at least he gave
wrenching.
It a run,
He did.
Right?
You got to give him credit, right, for saying, I'm going after it right now. And I guess especially at the U.S. Open where it's like, well, you got to beat someone in 18 holes the next day. Like, it's not like you're just going to the next tee. Go for it. Just try and roll it in there. So good on him for that.
And I don't think anybody wanted to play that course another 18 holes as well, which is probably part of it. They had enough. Round two will probably wrap up today. Before we go, that probably means bad things for the Canadian Open because a Monday finish would mean, I imagine, there'll be some withdrawals from the Canadian Open. It's got a horrible schedule. Like, this is one of the worst time slots on the PGA Tour, right after a major, especially one where you have to fly across the Atlantic Ocean back into the Eastern time zone for. I mean, the Canadians will show up, but I gotta think, like, Bubba Watson. There's a couple of guys that are big enough names that are hanging around close enough to the lead that might call it quits on coming to Oakville. which is sad because that's where I live.
Yeah, but like, do we even pretend like that tournament still matters to anybody in the PGA?
Yeah, it matters. Other than the Canadians, it used to be big, right?
It used to be big. Ever since they put it right after the British Open, like it's been nothing to people that you know outside of Canada.
Right. Well, and if you want to take the glass half full approach, which I tweeted out, maybe it means an easier chance for Graham Dillette or a David Hearn to win this thing if some of the bigger names have pulled out, or maybe we have another Ches Reavie winner. Remember Ches Reavie? No, you don't.
Certainly not.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
When's the last time a Canadian won it ever?
Yeah, it was once, it was like 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Really long time ago.
That'd be nice.
It would be.
There you go. Maybe this is a good thing. Right? Like now a Canadian gets to win a PGA Tour event. That's nice.
That would be nice. Unfortunately, Mike Weir's not going to be there, taking some time off for personal reasons. When we come back, we'll get back into the baseball talk. I want to hear what Arden has to say about seeing Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He saw him hit BP yesterday. He's 16 years old.
$4 million in his pocket, 16.
Right, yeah, he needs that. His dad is Vladimir Guerrero. Nice. What's his allowance? It's probably $100,000 a week. We'll talk about that. And there will be some NHL talk. Don't worry, Dixon. At some point.
I'll be ready.
Before the end of the next hour. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Annis alongside Arden Zwelling and Ryan Dixon. It's the Sportsnet Radio Network.
The top topics. The headiest headlines. Debatiest debate. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Annis alongside Arden Zwelling and Ryan Dixon. Second half of the Major League Baseball season is now underway for all 30 teams. And maybe we'll have a look around Major League Baseball and the prospects of some of the better teams in just a second. But Arden, I want to get your response to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. taking BP yesterday. I know you have a piece up on sportsnet.ca right now, So plug away, my friend.
It's interesting. You know, the son of Vladdy.
Oh, I thought you said your story is interesting. I'm sure that's interesting.
That goes without saying, right?
Yeah, I know. There's a piece up there just about the day that he spent in Toronto. The Blue Jays haven't done this before. They with an international signing where they're bringing the kid to Toronto just to give him like a taste of the MLB life. You know, he got to stretch with the team and take batting practice with Bautista and like with the first group of guys. So Bautista, Encarnacion, Reyes, and Josh Donaldson, which are some pretty good guys to hit with. And you know, Jose Bautista was in his ear the entire time, you know, giving him tips and advice. He's giving him, you know, advice on, you know, fielding balls and stuff. Like, they were really getting into it on, you know, eye level and positioning and throws and stuff like that. So, you know, and Jose Bautista gave him a fresh pair of cleats and, you know, yeah. it was a whole thing for him. So, you know, I think that, I mean, he's a special case because his dad's such a legend. His dad hit like 450 home runs, right? Yeah. So like his, you know, he's clearly been around this life before. But as a kid who, you know, has a $4 million contract in his back pocket and is, you know, expected to be pretty special, I think that just coming up yesterday just kind of removes a bit of the mystique, a bit of, you know, the what have you around it. And you know, he's still just 16. Like he can't even play affiliated ball this year, right? He has to go back to the Dominican and they run these like unofficial games with other like teenage prospects where he's going to get like 50 to 75 at bats against, you know, who knows who. And then next year he'll get into the system. But I mean, we asked him yesterday, like, you know, when do you think you could be here? And he said, yeah, I'll be here in like 2 years, which would be 18 years old.
Oh, like, we've seen it recently, right? With Bryce Harper was here at 18.
The last player in his age 18 season, the thing is Harper was turning 19, right? Like Alex Rodriguez was the last guy to do it. So basically Vlad Guerrero Jr. is saying, I'm going to be the next A-Rod.
Could you, I wouldn't put it past him though. That's the thing, right? Like when you're the son of a major leaguer, borderline Hall of Famer, I think he should probably be in the Hall of Fame.
And
maybe we'll get there, but it's a different case. It seems like.
And Vlad Jr. is a monster. Like
he doesn't look 16.
No, he's like 6'1", like 210 pounds. Like he's a big guy. And like the way he hits like loud too. The concern is he's not much of a fielder, not much of a runner. You know, all he really does is hit, which is okay. If you're going to be a prodigious hitter in the American League, you can be a DH, you can be a first baseman. Like, that's fine. We can kind of neutralize your impact in other areas of the game. But, I mean, he was hitting bombs in batting practice, line drives to all fields. You know, BP pitching is obviously different than real pitching, but, I mean, the Blue Jays are very confident in his bat, confident enough to, like, blow past their national signing limit they're going to handcuff themselves for the next 2 years in terms of what they can do on the international market. They're going to pay 100% tax on, you know, all the dollars they went past in terms of their slot and their bonus pool. So, you know, they clearly believe in him and think this is the guy that if we're going to take a huge risk and really step out, I mean, this is the one.
Baseball America did rank him the number one international prospect out there. Yeah. And Bed Badler saw him in the Dominican Republic, talked to him last week, loves him. Everybody loves him.
He wasn't that high on other. I think Fangraphs had him like fourth, and and MLB.com also had him fourth. But there's a couple of pitchers that, like, he was a top ranked hitter of all of the hitters in the international market.
Well, and you look at the Blue Jays system. We talk, and especially when we're talking about who could be on the move come non waiver trade deadline. It's all about pitchers, pitchers, pitchers. The Blue Jays have stocked that farm system with pitchers. I think it's probably important to get a position player that could be an elite position player. Anthony Alford might turn himself into one. Now that he's given up on football, but to have a big bat like Vladdy Jr. in the system kind of evens things out a little bit, it seems.
Well, and the Blue Jays don't really draft hitters, is the thing. They, in their first few rounds, they go high upside pitchers just all the time, which is because everyone's always looking for pitching. The pitching is the most valuable commodity out there. But at some point, they are going to need to develop some homegrown hitting talent, because what are the chances that in the next generation of Blue Jays teams that you're going to stumble upon another Jose Bautista, who was nothing until he got to Toronto and then became one of the best in the game. Right. Same with Edwin Encarnacion, who was kind of, you know, washed up in Cincy and on waivers and came to Toronto and became one of the best hitters in the game. What are the chances that another Josh Donaldson, you know, steal of a trade is going to present itself? So at some point they have to start developing these guys in-house. So this is one way to kind of find that high upside bat, is through the international market, where it's still kind of the Wild West, right? Like, you can still...
He's 16.
It's like getting a guy out of, like, midget in hockey, right?
Yeah.
Like it's insane.
There's something, like, untoward about it. Something weird, right? Like, that if you grew up in North America, if you played high school ball, if you're thinking about college, you gotta at least be, what, 18 before you can be drafted into Major League Baseball, and then there's slotted areas of money depending on where you're drafted, where you're likely to get a bonus money. But if you're from the Dominican, hey, you're 16, you can get $4 million, Ryan. That makes sense, right?
Yeah, it is Wild West, like you said. You'd think there'd be a way to sort of consolidate things there and get everyone on the same page, because it is it's a little crazy.
I do think we'll see an international draft in the next few years. Like, I think that's something Rob Manfred has said is, like, on his agenda, and it's something that he wants to accomplish. There's certainly a lot to, you know, there's a lot of hurdles to cross before they can do that, but I think it is something that has to happen because it is unfair.
Well, it's not that long ago the Canadians were exempt from the draft,
right?
Too.
Yeah, right?
Like the 90s, right? I think.
And you look at, you know, some of these kids, like Vlad Guerrero Jr. dropped out of school when he was 12. Right? A lot of these kids drop out of school, like, when they're very young to just focus on baseball. That's what he did. Vlad Guerrero Jr. dropped out of school when he was 12, worked with his uncle Wilton Guerrero, who played for the Expos, day and night on baseball. That's all he's done.
It's weird to talk about him because he's such an exceptional case, right? Like, there's most of the guys that come out of the Dominican and turn themselves into Major League, maybe it's not most, but there's a bunch of them that are, you know, they've been in poverty their entire lives and are looking to escape poverty, and really there's not a lot of options for them. For Vlad Jr., like, his dad's a millionaire and he has plenty of money and he can do whatever he wants, but obviously baseball is what he wants to do.
Roberto Osuna left school at 12 as well.
Right.
It's another guy, right? Like,
He comes from baseball bloodlines though as well.
Yes, not quite the bloodlines of Guerrero.
I don't think those are life-changing dollars that his dad made as a
Mexican League picture. Yeah, exactly.
It's still just a couple of days removed from the All-Star game. I don't think it's too far away to sort of break down, reminisce, or look at some interesting parts of the Home Run Derby with the new format, timed hitting, where you get, well, 4 minutes instead of five because wanted to make sure they got it in before the rains fell. Early returns are pretty good, Ryan. I look at how happy people were with the change in format. Well, maybe we should tweak some things about the game. But the Home Run Derby was wildly entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm universal acclaim for it, I would say. Because, yes, it sort of was symbolic of the greater problem with baseball and that it just seemed to go on forever. And, you know, in past years, you tune in at 8 o'clock and this thing doesn't wrap up till midnight. That's just a long time to watch You know, third base coaches lob the ball in there. So I two thumbs up for sure for the new format. And I think they really found something there. It got me thinking there's got to be a way to rejuvenate the dunk contest. Like that was my first thought was some simplifying the dunk contest. Maybe that's the way to go because it's one of those things that's just grown to be a beast as well. Right. So make it easy to understand time things, brackets. Okay. Get out there and do it. 2 hours done.
Yeah. That was maybe the most impressive part was just how simple it was. It's like, why did this take so long to figure out? Brackets, like have it NCAA tournament style, timed, hit home runs. Like it's not difficult, it seems. I still have problems with the game actually meaning something, especially when you've got so many outside factors, the fans voting in the starting lineup for a game that actually has real meaning and can factor in who wins the World Series. Plus the fact that you still, for a game that means something, you still, if you're the managers, you feel like you have to get everybody in there. And the end of these games, you got, they're still all-stars, but you got guys who are being inserted in, I mean, Brock Holt, pinch ran for Mike Trout. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Well, the game shouldn't mean something. Like, it shouldn't. Like, that was a mistake, and I think baseball will rectify that.
Will they?
I think so.
Isn't it a genie out of the bottle type thing, though? Like, you think Rob Manfred would go back on that? The whole reason it means something, right, was the embarrassment in Milwaukee with the tie game. And if you eliminate the meaning, I don't know, how do you avoid a tie again? You just got to have those long relievers who at some point in extra innings, they're just going to go the route. Or you have position players pitching.
What's wrong with a tie? Who cares?
I'm kind of right? with you.
I'm okay care. With it. If it's tied after tying, okay, let's
but
all go
Major
home.
League Baseball doesn't like it. They were embarrassed by that whole thing.
Yeah, well, because they didn't have a plan and they didn't know what to do. And they had to go like talk to Bud Selig in the stands. And like that's what was embarrassing about it is that there was nobody had thought, what if this happens?
Right.
So
that baseball would go to extra innings. It never happens, right?
Nobody had prepared for that. I think that was the embarrassment of it. If it's a tie, who cares? Like it's the whole thing. The whole point is just like, you know, as a moneymaker for the league and for everyone. And like, you know, it's the biggest part about the All-Star break is 4 days off. For players, they love it.
You host a radio show and you have to host on the 2 days after the All-Star game when there's nothing happening, that's tough. I mean, you talk about the ESPYs, I guess.
Players love it though. Just getting that little 4 day break, just to you know, rest, bumps and bruises, mentally decompress, like see your family for the first time in weeks. Like that's a big thing for players, and they like it.
To me, the one thing that makes me feel like we can change this All-Star game is I think about first of all, baseball. And their All-Star game is the only All-Star game of all the major North American professional sports that most resembles the real game, right? And if you could actually play it at its best, where you have a starting nine that played all nine innings and you had the best starting pitchers on both sides, would that not be like an amazing game? Like, I would love to see that. And I know maybe the starting pitching thing is a little crazy, but if you just had limits where guys can only throw a certain amount of pitches, but you had the same starting nine going the whole way through. Hey, the other guys can be named to the team. You're on the bench, but understand that you're not getting in this game. If they actually played it like that, would that not be amazing, Ryan?
I do think it's more about seeing all the players for
Boo.
The fans.
Who to you?
You know what, though? I agree with you in that because it is a real baseball game. To me, that gives it enough meaning, and you can take away the home field, you know? Like, you're still coming out to see.
But the managers still don't manage it like a real game.
I guess. But people, the bottom line is you're watching the best in the world, as far as I know, try as hard as they can, right? You're still trying as hard as you can to hit the ball. You're still trying as hard as you can to throw the ball past the guy.
Not like football where you're just
watching
guys go by you.
So that just gives a different element to it that, on its own, I think makes it stand out. I don't think. And really, too, like, well, yeah, I don't think there's, I don't think you have to attach the significance of the home field.
If you want to do it like that, right, like what Ben suggested, do it after the season when you're not worried about a guy getting hurt midseason, right? And you can have a starter go 6-7.
Not
or seven.
A chance, though, you get do those guys to come. Like, guys who've been, like, in Hawaii for a month who weren't
in
the playoffs.
Do it at the end, right? Wow. Like, just either, you know, during October. Play, you know what? Get a dome get the Rogers Center. It's not going to be any playoff baseball there. get the best players that aren't on playoff teams playing there against a team of all-stars from Japan. You know what I mean? Play two at the Rogers Center, two at the Tokyo Dome.
I think,
do that. Japan's all-stars versus the MLB all-stars.
I think we get close enough to that with the World Baseball Classic, which is
once every 4 or 5 years. Like, you know, it's do it every year. Japan All-Stars versus MLB All-Stars. Why
well,
not?
Yeah. And that'd football, be cool. Football plays Pro Bowl now after the
right?
season.
Football does
the,
it.
Yeah. The Super Bowl.
And then maybe the players would get into it because they, you know, they'd, it
probably
would be.
Not,
no.
Maybe. There'd be more of a shot than if they're playing against each other, I think.
Have them play like slow pitch beer softball. Get to first, chug a beer.
We all know the rules of softball.
This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Ryan Dixon and Arden Zwelling. So we're at the midway point of the season. Let's have a look around baseball as to everybody's chances. I mentioned I think the Yankees are primed to pull away from everybody. The Central's weird. I can't believe the Twins are still hanging in there. I really can't. And especially the Joe Mauer is just now Ichiro Suzuki. The Tigers are just one game over 500, still without Miguel Cabrera. And the White Sox, I guess, are still nominally in it. And the Indians, I guess, are dead last. But, Arden, how do you see the Central playing out the second half of the season?
Well, this is why you're not seeing more movement. There's so many teams in the majors that, like, don't know if they're in this or not. Like, the White Sox are a prime example of a team that, you know, a few weeks ago would be like, oh, yeah, like, they look like a team that's going to have to sell. They're in last place in the AL Central. You know, maybe now we're going to see Samardzija move and we'll see, you know, whoever else move. And now they're, like, right back in it. You know, like, now they're, you know, six games back for wild card, you know, four games under 500. I mean, it's strange. I don't know. I think Kansas City runs away with that Central, really, just because they're, yeah, I went to KC and watched them for three games. They're a good club. Like, you know,
did you have KC barbecue?
I did have KC barbecue.
How good was it?
Twice.
I heard him raving about it in the office.
Really?
Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, yeah.
We had Rex Hudler on Baseball Central, and I was filling in for Jeff Blair a couple weeks ago, and he was raving about it. Hopefully you were listening, and because he gave us a couple of names of barbecue places.
No, but yeah, I mean, if you're on the ground, everybody's willing to give you spots to go to. There's no shortage of that. No, yeah, it's tasty.
I was in Kentucky, and they don't really, I was kind of surprised. I was like, hey, what's like native, like Louisville food? And it was like, yeah, don't really have any
bourbon.
Yeah, it's bourbon. It's bourbon
for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
That's right.
The cool thing about KC is they tailgate the baseball games.
Really?
So like, I'm like lugging my laptop into the game and passing by all these people like drinking beer in the morning and eating meat. It's like I have made a poor choice in my life.
Yeah. Like, is it the baseball town in some ways? Would you say like it kind of has that rep of like?
I feel like St. Louis is, but yeah, it's like.
It's those two, maybe, to some degree, right?
Kansas City is just like a beer-drinking, meat-eating, like, sports-loving town is basically what KC is.
And it's amazing. Everybody's super thin there. Oh, wait.
No, it's certainly not. They look like they eat a lot of barbecue. Yeah, they enjoy their freedoms in Kansas City.
As they did at the NASCAR race I went to in Kentucky, as you can imagine.
Did you go to the NASCAR?
I did.
That's awesome. How was that?
It was spectacular, honestly. Yeah. I'd never been to an auto race of any kind.
Yeah.
And maybe this makes me sound stupid, but I didn't realize you could see the whole track. Like, I thought you're like on a corner and like you just see, and you're looking at the board and you're looking at the pylon, but you see the whole track.
The lure of the
oval.
The oval versus Indy. Well, Indies are both, but an F1, that's right. You go to F1 race, you're at turn 10, whatever. You just see boom, boom, boom.
Right.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. I thought it was great.
Just sit there for like 5 hours crushing beers. That's just what you do.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
pretty much
what I did.
That's awesome. That's incredible.
It was for a bachelor party. So yeah, we really enjoyed it. What we didn't do, and maybe next time we'll have to do, is rent an RV and go park in the infield.
That's the one.
We were going to do that, but it just didn't make sense with the number of guys we have. I digress. Slightly.
This is a lot more interesting than anything else we were talking about.
Listen, it's the dog days of summer in sports, okay?
Seriously.
AL West, Angels walk it off over the Red Sox yesterday. Mike Trout hit a walk-off. We'll talk about our MVP candidates in a second. Astros right there again, though, half game back. And you mentioned, Arden, they could be buyers here come deadline. Why wouldn't they be, right?
I think they will be. I mean, they're right there. And nobody really expected them to have this season. You know, they're kind of playing with found money right now. So, why not push all in when, you know, especially in that division where it looks like it's going to be the Angels. I mean, Texas is in third and they're five games under 500. So why not?
Yeah, it makes...
You know, ride
it makes
that Dallas Keuchel train, like, all the way to glory.
Is he ever going to cut that beard, do you think? Or is that
You can't now, the year he's having, right?
Yeah.
Don't want to change anything. Got to let it eat.
The A's, to me, are a bit of a surprise. I know they in the offseason, looked like a team that was rebuilding, and why not when you're trading Josh Donaldson? But they're plus 39 in run differential. They've been extremely unlucky, but they've also had poor pitching. They've scored a bunch of runs, and the bullpen's given them problems. They've had injuries. They're sellers at the deadline, but I don't think that team's like that far away, really, from being good relatively soon.
I wonder if you'll see like a Scott Kazmir get moved. Like that's kind of that's kind of the name. Like I wonder if a Tyler Clippard will get moved. I don't know. You know, Billy Beane's always looking to, you know, get value when he can. And at surprising times, as you've seen with the Donaldson thing. Look at all the moves that the A's made last year, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know. So yeah, we'll see. But I think they will be moving. Billy Beane's always in the middle of it, you know?
He is. The Seattle Mariners, man, I talk a lot about how there's so few long-term deals in baseball that you can look to and say, hey, you know what? Throughout the length of that deal, that made a whole lot of sense. I can't believe it's year two of the Robinson Cano deal. Yeah. And we're like, what happened? But it seems like whoever goes to Seattle, no matter where they put the fences, because they brought them back in again, it's an impossible place to hit. And it seems like on the surface that they would have enough. And they got, Nelson Cruz is, I guess, the exception because he's done well there. But I don't know. Like, there's obviously some regret there with the Robinson Cano deal, even though it is just year two.
Devin Travis has been a better player this year than Robinson Cano. And
by miles.
Devin Travis missed like a month and a half of baseball. So that's not good, you know? And it's not just the, you know, Felix Hernandez is on a long deal. I mean, there's, you know, Seattle might be reaching kind of a watershed moment where they have to decide what they're going to do with this franchise. A lot of people thought they'd be okay this year. You know, a lot of people thought they'd, especially in, you know, that division, that they'd do fine. And they haven't. So they might be reaching kind of a point where they have to decide, you know, are we going to push more in with this group, or do we need to start to, you know, look at other options?
Yeah, it's really incredible. Robinson Cano hitting .249. He's got a .287 on base.
It's not good.
He's played every game this year with just 6 home runs. So that's a whole lot of not good. Over in the NL, all season long, the St. Louis Cardinals have been the cream of the crop in the National League, the mecca of baseball, I think, when you look around all 30 Major League Baseball teams. But their lead in the NL Central, just 3.5 games over the Pittsburgh Pirates, who've gone on a nice little run to close the gap on them. Dixon, when you look at the National League, are the Cards like far and away the team that jumps out to you as the favorite?
Yeah, it seems like it. It's kind of too bad for Pittsburgh that they've got this great record and, you know, are probably going to get relegated to a one game, you know, live or die situation, which of course they were in last year and lost to the eventual World Series champs. So, I mean, we're used to it with St. Louis. Hacking scandals aside, sort of the benchmark for the MLB. That division's really fun though, because you've got the classic team, the model for the league. You've got Pittsburgh, which, you know, a couple years ago I went down there and did a story. They were trying to reverse their, you know, 20 years, I guess, under .500, not just out of the playoffs. Yeah. It was unbelievable, right? And now we've, the last couple of years, really seen that come to fruition. There's a lot of exciting things there. And then obviously the Cubs, right? I mean, that's going to be a story I feel like casual fans can latch on to, because everyone knows the long, tortured, maybe not even tortured because they never even really get close, history of the Cubs. And, you know, seeing them turn it around with some of the young guys they have, and, you know, knowing they're just that perfect mix. There's only a few teams that can put so much resources into development and then go out and sign someone like John Lester. So they're a fascinating team to watch. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough to overcome St. Louis, no doubt.
The Cubes are interesting to me. Like, how much credit do we give Joe Maddon? I want to be on the logical side of things that say that you know, managers really don't mean a whole heck of a lot, because it's an individual sport masquerading as a team sport. But, and I know there's a lot of talent on that Cubs team as well, but he's gotten some great performances out of some really marginally talented teams in Tampa. And I don't know, are the Cubs as talented as they are to be 6 games over .500 and in a playoff spot right now? I think there's something to Joe Maddon. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, well, for guys in our industry, you're always going to say there's something to him because he's such an engaging,
yeah, that's true,
just fun guy too, right? Like, I love people in pro sports who don't take themselves too seriously, and you don't see that too often. And I think that is genuinely the case with Joe Maddon. So Let's just, since we can't quantify it anyways, let's just say yes and hope that's true.
With the Cubs, it's the pitching staff that's been, you need to start talking about like a guy like Jake Arrieta is like one of the best pitchers in baseball, right?
Yeah,
like,
and the Orioles just let him go for nothing, right? Essentially, right?
Yeah, it's like, it's incredible. What's, you know, Jason Hamill, it's been having like a great year, you know, like I wonder how much Joe Maddon, who is like kind of like an in-game tactician, you know, gets the most out of his lineup, like out of which players play in which position. And, you know, you look at what he turned Ben Zobrist into Tampa Bay, like the super utility role and all that stuff that, you know, and just the way that he manages in-game, that's kind of that tactician stuff is where he shines. And really, I think it's the Cubs starting pitching that has been what has brought them to where they are now. Because when you look at their lineup, like Addison Russell's been up for, you know, since April, and he's been terrible. He's been awful. He's still one of the best prospects in the game, but I mean, he has not looked good. You know, so Pat, you know, outside Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, like they haven't had that many significant contributions in the lineup. Starlin Castro still plays every day for them, and he doesn't hit.
Yeah, and as Soler is he's been hurt and kind of meh.
Strikeout or home run, right? So you know, it's the starting pitching. So I wonder if I don't think you can give Joe Maddon that much credit for, you know, their starting pitching being really, really good.
All right, take that, Joe Maddon.
I showed him.
You think the Orioles want to do over on that Arrieta trade? Yeah, they sent him with Strope and cash to the Cubs for Steve Clevenger and Scott Feldman. that's not so great. All right, so halfway point in the season, it's kind of a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason. Who are your MVP candidates and winners at the halfway point, Arden?
You want me to? I mean, it's obvious, you know, Mike Trout in the AL and Bryce Harper in the NL. For me,
you think it's obvious? I mean, Donaldson's right there, right?
I think Trout's pulling away a bit when you look at, you know, Trout's got a higher triple slash line, a higher war, more home runs. I mean, Trout's got a higher everything, you know? He walks, he gets on base more, he walks more. I mean, it's everything about Trout. Trout, you know, steals more bases. He's just a better player than Josh Donaldson. As great as Josh Donaldson is, I think Mike Trout's a pretty obvious pick for MVP in the AL.
You look at ESPN has war. I don't know who they get that from. They have their own war formula. I'm not sure if they use Baseball Reference or fan graphs. In the American League, it's Mike Trout at 6. And actually, second is Manny Machado, which is kind of crazy.
He's having a nice little year.
Yeah, yeah. At 5. And Donaldson's third at 4.9. Is it the same for you, Dixon, when you look at the MVPs?
I think so. I don't think you want to overthink it. And how cool is that, that we've got... I mean, we've been talking about Harper Trout for a while, but a lot of Harper was potential and, you know, it could be maybe glimpse this, that, the other, and now we're seeing it all come together. I mean, it's pretty crazy.
It's 22, he's Bryce Harper.
Yeah, sure. And
this is the first year in his career he's faced a pitcher that was younger than him, and it was once he faced Roberto Osuna.
Yeah, yeah. That's
unbelievable.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
And with Trout, I mean, you're looking at a guy who, even just in his fourth full year, like, you got to start talking all time with this guy, right? Like,
he's on pace for it.
He, you know, right now, so I guess he turns 24 here in a couple weeks in August. And I mean, assuming he maintains where he's at or even improves a little, as, you know, theoretically he should. Where that guy can get to is unbelievable. So, yeah, pretty cool to be a baseball fan with these two guys tearing up the leagues.
It is the base of, like, a Hall of Fame career, Mike Trout has done. Like, that's the building blocks of if he continues
on. Well,
the
greatest right-handed hitter of all time is what he's on.
Yeah, like, as I feel like we heard this almost right away because of his build, but, like, the guy's Mickey Mantle.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He's got 125 home runs. He's not 24 yet.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, and
Burns is going to have to come back and make more baseball documentaries just based on this guy.
The 45th inning. And we said the same thing about Albert Pujols, who will still end up in the Hall of Fame, but he won't end up as the greatest right-handed hitter of all time because he had a couple of down years in there. But, I mean, and remember, he broke into the league at a very young age as well and kind of set the
world
on fire.
What is his age?
Well, I mean, there's always that as well. But talking about the young players in Trout and Harper, it always gets me thinking about the state of the game because there are people that tell you, oh, baseball's dying. Did you see the rating, the overnight rating for the All-Star game in the United States? The lowest ever. And there's just no faces of the game anymore now that Derek Jeter is gone. Look at Bryce Harper. Even in that All-Star game, like, he's undoing the top button. Like, he takes his hat off and, like, runs his hand through his flowing locks. Like, he wants to be that guy. Mm-hmm. And by all accounts, like, you look at the counting statistics, he should be that guy. Same with Mike Trout. Do those guys have enough appeal? And why did Derek Jeter have so much appeal? Like, he was kind of a boring guy, but why was he the face?
Trout could be Jeter a little bit, and Harper could be something maybe a little more fun, I would say, is the way that dynamic could break down. Because, yeah, you know, Trout oozes confidence, but I think it's, you know, it's not necessarily actively put on display by him, whereas Harper's not afraid to go out and say the Nats are going to win the World Series and things of that nature, you know, so...
Is it where they play, though? Like, does somebody have to play for the Yankees? Do they have to play for, like, this huge team? And I know D.C. is the capital of the United States. It's not a big, big market. And on the West Coast, it's tough. Like, how many people watch Angels games when they're on at 10 o'clock at night?
They're the second team in their own market, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Does it almost, you need to have one of those guys play for the Yankees, which may very well happen when Bryce Harper hits free agency?
I think it helps. There's no doubt about it. I mean... That's a huge part of the Jeter mystique. I don't think we would talk about Derek Jeter the same way if he played 20 years, you know, in Houston. But
well, that's like, am I wrong here in saying that those guys aren't on the level of a Derek Jeter and right now, and they're on pace to be far better players than Derek Jeter?
Yeah, they're this generation's stars. Yeah,
and but, you could but throw there's like not a... like this mass appeal though, is there?
I don't
Isn't
know, I
it think... just a baseball appeal?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we're looking backwards at Jeter, right? Is the thing.
That's
we're looking
right.
at his whole body of work, like in the heart of Jeter's. And Jeter was winning championships every year, too, is
right.
the thing, right? Like it was like every season in the playoffs. That's what was special about Jeter.
Every season. And we got to get these guys some like starlet girlfriends as well, which would, that would help. If
you know,
tabloids every day.
There's no shortage of young, like look at Giancarlo Stanton, right?
Yeah.
Like Manny Machado, Chris Sale, you know.
Yeah.
Like, look at some of the, like, you know, Buster Posey, Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo. Like this is a young man's game now, baseball. As all professional sports have
trended
to young men's
definitely.
Games, you know, hockey especially,
for
right?
Sure.
Like it's all becoming kind of a young man's world.
We will talk about hockey coming up in our next segment. We'll also talk about Kanye West and the Raptors putting the final touches on their offseason as far as free agent signings with Bismack Biyombo today. That's all coming up before we sign off at the top of the hour. Ben Ennis alongside Arden Zwelling and Ryan Dixon. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah. And you say Shy City. Shy City.
I'm coming home again. Do you think about me now and then?
Yeah.
Do you think about me now and then? Cause I'm coming home again.
Oh. 11:42, Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet Magazine Live, Arden Zwelling, Ryan Dixon. I am Ben Ennis. Taking you through until the top of the hour, and then I will have a brief edition of Sportsnet today before we send you out to Rogers Center, game 2 of 3 between the Blue Jays and Tampa Bay Rays. So we only got 10 minutes left, and there's a couple things I want to get to, and I want to get your NHL takes, Dixon, because my goodness, you're here for 2 hours. Got to get you to talk about the NHL at some point. So I'll tee you up on some Maple Leafs stuff, because I know if I get you talking about the Habs, you'll take up all these 10 minutes that we have left. Yeah. I know it's almost 2 hours, but you got to turn on your microphone when you speak. So Maple Leafs, to me, are an exciting team for the first time in a long time because there's so much intrigue as far as the young players. Although, when you're looking at Nylander, now maybe William Nylander will be in the NHL next year, but a whole bunch won't. Like Mitch Marner's not going to be there, although they've told him that he'll be given a chance, of course, training camp. Of course, you got to tell everybody they've got a chance, and it's a meritocracy. It's almost like the Marlies could be the more interesting team to watch if you're a Leaf fan this year.
100%. And there's no easier time to have hope than when the results, when basically your relationship with the team isn't tied to its results at the highest level, right? I mean, who knows exactly what the Leafs are going to be next year, but the bottom line isn't, you know, whether they do or don't make the playoffs next year. The bottom line is what's going on with this organization. And I mean, depending on what you make of the fact they still don't have a GM and have to kind of get things sorted out there, you could make a case this is the most exciting time to be a Toronto Maple Leaf fan in the long history, or at least the back half of the long history, the last 50 years, because never done this. They've never said, we are hitting Control-Alt-Delete. We're starting again. And we're doing it the right way. Like, it's crazy when you sit back and realize how many wackadoo regimes this franchises live through, or even ones that look like they were going to be good, like when Brian Burke came in and, you know, as it turns out, maybe wasn't the right fit because he didn't want to do the rebuild from the ground up, or maybe was just on the, you know, came in as a sort of old school guy right when the game kind of changed. Now you have, you know, these a young sort of sharp guy in Dubas helping drive things. Obviously, Brendan Shannon is open to anything. And really, at the end of the day, even if they don't have the sharpest management, it's almost more about the mandate. Like, I'd rather have the mandate of let's do this the right way and only have a B, you know, management team than have a, well, we got to win now and have an A management team, because you've kind of handcuffed them. So,
and it might be an A management team.
And it might be. We don't know yet, right? It's still taking form. I mean, when you look at the fact that the, you go back and look at the Leafs drafts the last 10 years, they don't get anything outside the second round. And that's why I actually think, I mean, for, I've, you know, like most people in the media, whenever a team's sort of middling, I think, tear it down, easy to say. And obviously they've done that with Toronto now. But for everyone saying the Leafs have to finish last overall next year and get a high pick, yeah, that'd be great. But I actually don't even think they have to do that. I think they have enough now that if they start hitting on some second rounders the way most of the rest of the league does, this doesn't have to be a long, painful thing. People throw out 5 years like, oh, they're going to be terrible for half a decade. That's not the way the NHL works now. And if they do this right, they could be on the upswing very quick.
Do they have a bottom two roster? Like, do they have a bottom three roster? I'm not even sure that they do. They might.
Depends on what they get from the goalie. Yeah. I mean, Jonathan Bernier could yet prove to be, I think, a really good NHL goalie, and that's going to get you some wins right there. You build in 5% improvement up for everyone because Mike Babcock is their coach now, and all of a sudden, yeah, maybe they are, you know, finishing whatever, 20th, not, you know, 29th. We'll see.
The Raptors shored up their roster today, signing Bismack Biyombo. They still have one more roster spot to shore up to get to 15. It's kind of a similar situation to the Leafs. Now, the Raptors will be a force in the NBA, and they'll at least challenge for a playoff spot. You got to think in the Eastern Conference.
You got to work hard not to in the East.
Yeah. Although it's going to be improved slightly this year, the East at least, we all expect. But there's also going to be some interesting parts that are playing for that Raptors 905 team down at the Hershey Center. I mean, you're going to have Bruno Caboclo. You're going to have Bebe Noguera. You're going to have some draft picks maybe out there playing in Mississauga. But overall, I think we all agree that the NBA team, the Raptors that play down at the Air Canada Center, are going to be improved defensively. And if they're not, there's some hard questions that need to be asked, because every move seemingly has been to help the defense.
That seemed to be the goal with absolutely everything they did, right? Was just defense. I guess if you watch them at all last year, that's probably the most frustrating thing. So they could go out and score 130 points and then give up 132. So, it'll be interesting to see. It'll be cool to see, like, Louis Scola playing at the ACC. Right?
Sure.
Like, you know?
35-year-old. Like, Louis Scola.
Right? Like, I don't know, it'll be an interesting team to watch, see how DeMar Carroll, like, kind of meshes with things, see if Terrence Ross can take a step, Jonas Valanciunas, see if he can take a big step, and, you know, which is something that I think everyone was looking for, you know, Ross and Valanciunas to take steps last year, and maybe I'm sure they improved a bit, but I don't think they improved quite as much as people wanted them to. It'll be interesting to see where they go this year.
And it's a big season for DeMar DeRozan as well, because he's probably going to want his money with the cap going up.
Seems like in the NBA, all you have to do is want the money, though, and you get it.
Yes.
The way they're spending with the TV deals that are coming in there. I mean, the way the salary cap is, like, rocketing up.
It's
going to
go up like $20 million next year.
It's insane. So it seems, you know, NBA players are getting paid.
Yes. Just like radio hosts. Okay, Mark. So Mark Cuban also says he wants the NBA to expand the number of playoff teams to 20. I hate this. I hate the talk of it happening in the NFL. I love smaller playoff fields like baseball. I love when the regular season means something, because if it doesn't, like, it already feels like it doesn't mean anything in the NBA. If there's 20 playoff teams, you add four more playoff teams, two more in each league. Like, that's a joke, isn't it?
Is it purely revenue? Is that why he wants to do it? Yeah, just money. Make money.
Don't you have enough money at some point?
Well, I wouldn't think that would be the thing at the top of his what we got to change agenda after the fiasco they just went through, right? With DeAndre Jordan. But yeah, I agree. I mean, it's always the push-pull of, from our perspective, we just want the best viewing experience or the best pure sports experience. Obviously, there's dollars and cents at the highest level, but I mean, you mentioned football, which has nailed it. Like, to mess with that formula, which, you know, they still talk about the 18-game season and, like you said, letting more teams in. I understand it gives hope, but it's false hope to so many markets, and it's, I don't know, I just find it a little manipulative. I agree. I like it when fewer teams get in, and it does mean something, lend some significance to the games.
I like the way baseball has it right now, too, where you do have two extra, you have the extra wild cards, so you've got two wild cards, but those teams, like, they don't want to be the wild card teams. They want to win their division. There's still such an importance on winning your division. I like the way baseball does it, but I like the way baseball does a lot of things.
Well, maybe you do that with the NBA, and you go, like, the top four teams in each conference get a bye, and then the rest have to, you know,
I think it was Bill Simmons that proposed like a little mini tournament for that eight seed. Like, I'm all about that. Like, have one game playoffs.
Then you get like a cool like Cinderella team that if they go on a run after that, right? Like, that's what's cool about baseball is when if you win the wild card playing game and you go on a run, like, that's super cool because you were like almost, you barely got into this thing and now you have a shot at winning it all, right?
Well, like the two teams that played in the World Series last year. Right? And the Royals were down, what, like five runs in the seventh inning to the Oakland A's last year?
In basketball, you already have more than half the teams in the league making the playoffs. Like, you're already wet. Like, let's go swimming, you know? Like, just go nuts.
Okay, before we go away, Kanye West is going to play the closing ceremonies of the Pan Am Games. We're going to get our Pan Am game comment in, and it comes in the form of Kanye West. I'm a Kanye West guy. The music, like, not, I don't know, the other stuff, maybe not, but I don't care. This is not a Canadian thing. It's the Pan Am Games. He's North American. What is the problem here? I find the wailing against Kanye West playing the closing ceremonies ridiculous.
It's
Ryan.
True. It's true. That must be why we saved it for now.
Yeah. no diverging opinions.
Yeah. The dude catches a lot of flack for being a pompous artist, but my God, he's not the one who invented that mold. So maybe we should let go a little.
Yeah. His music isn't that offensive. Even if I was a person who got offended by it, I wouldn't find it that offensive, really. Like, it's fine.
I'm sure
it's
there's a few songs.
Fine music. The Yeezus album was kind of offensive, but it was just bad, is why that was offensive, right? Like, you know, yeah, there's no problem with it. Who cares? If it was the Foo Fighters, would everybody be upset that they're not a Canadian band?
Oh, so now you want to have the racial discussion.
Right? You said that.
We got 1 minute left. Let's go.
All right. On that note, that'll do it for another edition of Sportsnet Magazine Live. I will take you through until 12:30 with an edition of Sportsnet. Today, we will talk to Ben Nicholson-Smith and Ian Leggett as well, as the Open Championship about to resume. For Arden Zwelling and Ryan Dixon, I'm Ben Ennis. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.